I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The future of education in the U.S. will be our subject this hour of the program. We'll be talking about President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet choice for Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos. She's a very strong voucher and school choice proponent, and those who are in favor of an expansion of voucher and school choice are praising the selection. Public education advocates fear that she will not be a strong advocate for the public education system in the state, and not in the state, in the country. We'll be talking about all of this with two different viewpoints this hour of the program. Jim Bender will be joining us. He is on the staff of School Choice Wisconsin, and a little bit later, the Vice President of Education Policy at American Progress, Catherine Brown, will join us. I know you have a lot to say about this issue whenever we talk about education topics. Our phones are a-ringing. So here's the phone number if you'd like to join our conversation, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Jim Bender is our first guest. He is the former chief of staff and spokesman for former Assembly Speaker Jeff Fitzgerald, previously operated a communications firm working for corporations and for nonprofits. He joined School Choice Wisconsin in December of 2010 and was responsible for lobbying Governor Walker and the legislature during the 2011-2012 session. Jim, hello. Thanks very much for being with us. Hello, Jim.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Okay, there you are. Yeah, good to have you here. So when you heard that Betsy DeVos was nominated to be Secretary of Education, were you pleased? Were you concerned? What were your thoughts?
Very pleased. I think that I speak for a lot of people in the education reform community that it will not be a breath of fresh air for education reform moving forward, but I think the story is...
Yeah, Jim, hold on. We can't hear what you're saying. Your phone is cutting in and out, so we're going to get you on a different phone line so we can hear your words. He said he was very pleased, and we'll find out why. We'll fill in the rest of the sentences after we get him on a different phone line. Hour two, let me just tell you of our program. We'll be speaking with a Milwaukee author who was a caretaker along with other members of his family for his father for the last 19 months of his life. His father is a former FBI agent who was involved in some really high-profile cases. He's written about that whole journey from being diagnosed as terminally ill to his ultimate death in a very moving book about that process and also about their sometimes difficult relationship when he was growing up. The book is And Good Night to All the Beautiful Young Women, A Tale of Episodic Dementia, The Parent Becomes the Child. So that's coming up hour two of our program today. Our phone number, again, what are your thoughts about the nomination of Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education? And Jim, I think we have you again. Hi, are you there now?
I am here. Yes.
Much better, much better. So you were delighted to hear, and then we couldn't hear you anymore. So you're delighted with the appointment because?
Well, we're delighted with the appointment, and I think on twofold. I think it's not just for the education reform community, but I think it's for anybody that's interested in innovation in education. I think the overarching message that we're getting from the administration is that you're going to see a reduced role of the federal government in education. And I think moving the decisions from Washington, D.C. down to the states, and I would argue even beyond the states, but down to the local district level, I think is good news for everybody involved in education.
Why?
Well, certainly, if you spend any amount of time with the folks in the public school education establishment, you'll understand that the system itself is governed heavily by federal rules and regulations and mandates that then get picked up by the state and are required to do it. I mean, for example, when you look at, you know, we have more than 300 employees at the Department of Public Instruction that are funded by federal dollars to administer education programs here in the state of Wisconsin, 300 people. And so when you think about the massive amount of man hours that it takes to fulfill all those federal mandates and all those federal administrative and bureaucratic rules, If you can start to streamline those, eliminate some of those, find the ones that are working, eliminate the ones that aren't, you're going to free up local school districts to be innovative and focus on what they're doing as opposed to filling out federal regulation and mandates.
What do you think of the state of public schools in the country? Do you think on the whole they're doing a good job or not?
Well, I don't think that one person sitting at a desk can say that they're doing well, because to define what a school is doing should be left up to the parent. Now, I can look at standardized test scores, I can look at the NAEP, I can look at international scores on PISA and show that the United States isn't where they need to be. We're certainly not in an upper tier of educators in the world, but that's not a condemnation of education. That's just one metric. If you're sitting in Milwaukee and you've got a number of schools in your vicinity and one of them has flashing lights because the police are there regularly, I don't think the parents are concerned as much with a standardized test score or what their NAEP or PISA, you know, rankings are if their school isn't safe. So I'm very hesitant to say, is a school working or not? Because an individual school, which might have very high rankings under some metrics, might not serve an individual student very well, which is why I support parent choice, because I think the person that should decide whether a school is working or not is the parent and whether that school is working for their child or not. The view of a, you know, just coming down from a system, and to say the United States public school system, I'm just not a big fan of looking at things on the macro. I'd much rather look on the micro.
Mm-hmm. From what I read about Betsy DeVos in Michigan, and tell me if this is correct or not, she has been in favor of a lot of schools, for-profit schools, particularly in the Detroit area, for-profit charter schools. Should education be in the realm of for-profit?
Well, you know, that's a boogeyman. That's a loaded question. And to say that people are in education with the funding that goes in per child, whether it be private school vouchers or charter schools, there is no evidence that the profit motive is what's driving what's happening in education reform. That's a standard talking point of the left, that they try to disqualify charters because of some profit motive, and that's just it just doesn't ring true. And, you know, as for Betsy DeVos, I mean, the idea that she is involved in education reform in Michigan or going to be involved in education reform at the national level for a profit motive is just is absurd. You know, her family is very wealthy. She's not doing this to get a paycheck. You know, their family were creators of the Amway Corporation. I mean, these are all things where her motivations, as well as all of us in education reform, there are different business models. Some are nonprofit, some are for-profit for different reasons. Some are for-profit simply for building acquisitions or doing other things. There's all sorts of different models. But that's an input. The goal should be better results in educating children. If somebody is supporting a mechanism, which in Detroit, the growth models from the latest Credo study, if those charter schools are creating an education marketplace that's helping kids, that's what we should be focused on.
So you think it's not a legitimate area of discussion to see whether or not schools should be run by companies that are making money? I mean, that's a very different way of educating the vast majority of young people in this country, isn't it?
Are you familiar with the amount of companies that profit from the education system we have now, the public education system? I mean, to think that the textbook companies, to think that the suppliers, to think that the software companies, the idea that profit isn't involved in education is just silly, and it's not used to have a discussion about how we should educate children. When you talk about for-profit charter schools, what you're trying to do is demean education reform and demean the whole method by which they deliver their system. The profit, I would argue, generated by the teachers' unions over the last 30 years has been obscene. And so to think that profit somehow is a disqualifying factor in education, it doesn't do the students any good. It doesn't do education providers any good. And it's a political argument. It's not an education argument.
So what is the reform movement's mission?
The reform movement's mission, I think overall, is to try to create quality options for parents where, as Supreme Courts have ruled time and again, parents are the primary educators of their children. You can do that by being homeschooled, especially for K through 12. You can do that by being homeschool, because in almost all states, it's a requirement by law to educate your children. So you have a legal requirement to educate your children, and parents are the primary educators. If they so choose an outside entity to educate their children, it should not be dictated by zip code. It should not be based on a system built decades ago that was focused on a one-size-fits-all. Nothing else in our society does that. We believe flexibility is good, empowering parents is good, giving them options is good. The marketplace of ideas, the marketplace of education is a positive thing. Competition is a positive thing. We want to empower parents to find the right educational setting for their child and focus on outcomes, focus on learners, not focus on a model that says sitting in a seat for a certain amount of time qualifies you to move on to the next grade. We got to be focused on learning and finding individual options for individual students.
But isn't it true that educational quality is in many cases determined by zip code, because in poorer districts, the schools tend to need more resources and in many cases don't have the tax base, so they're not as good as the schools that are in wealthier areas?
If you are measuring students on standardized test scores, and you're going to say that poverty in other areas are a disqualifying factor for a local district to have high performance, I don't think is ever going to get us on a path that's going to solve urban education problems. There are schools in Milwaukee, in MPS, in charter, and in the voucher program that are absolutely getting amazing results. It is not as if we haven't figured it out. We have some very high-quality schools in urban settings. We just don't have enough. And I just will never buy into the argument that because Milwaukee is an urban setting with a lot of poor kids, that somehow they aren't able to learn like other people are. If we have a system in place, and quite frankly, we've had a system in place in Wisconsin that has the largest education graduation gap in the country, if that system isn't able to adapt, if that system isn't able to overcome what's on the ground, then we need to try a new system. We need to be able to try new things. But it's not as if it's not getting done. It is getting done in Milwaukee, and there are some amazing results. We just need more of them.
So if the answer in Milwaukee, as we all know, has had voucher schools for a long, long time now, enough time to be able to see if indeed they are performing much better than public schools, if reform is working.
Yes, absolutely. So if you look at the latest round of the ACT scores, the low-income students in Milwaukee outpaced not only their low-income peers, but the all-income peers of MPS on the ACT scores. And in Racine, the same thing was true. The low-income students in Racine outperformed their public school counterparts in not just the low-income comparison, but the all-income comparison of Racine. And for the Wisconsin State program, the low-income students in the Wisconsin program, which encompasses the rest of the state, outperform their public school counterparts on the ACT, regardless of income. And so when you look at the Badger exam results from 2 years ago, you had the voucher program higher. The Forward exam had many instances where the voucher program in as a whole were outperforming public school counterparts. But then when you start to look at the school-by-school basis, when you start to look at what we call them 80-80 schools, which are 80% poverty, 80% minority students, many of the top 10 schools, in fact, I think 7 or 8 of the top 10 schools are either independent charters or voucher schools in the city of Milwaukee. So, yes, when you're talking about those types of measures, but again, I'm hesitant to say that 1 year of test scores or any sort of test score is the metric. We did a safety report where we did an open records request on every school location in the city of Milwaukee for police calls to that address. The numbers were shocking. The police calls to private schools in the voucher program and to independent charters were dramatically lower than those of public schools. And so when you look at school culture, when you look at graduation rates, which are higher in the voucher program, you look at standardized test scores, which are now exceeding public school peers, there are any sort of metric that would say that, yes, the school choice program is working. It's changing lives. But I still get back to, there are many schools that are changing lives on metrics that aren't measured with grit and sustainability. I mean, there are just so many things that go into education that we need not have a conversation based on one metric. But when it comes to standardized test scores and those other types of metrics, yes, the voucher program is outperforming.
What is it, do you think, that those schools are doing better than public schools? What is reform doing that is making it successful?
Well, I think it gets back to the original topic, which is Betsy DeVos and what's it going to mean for education in Wisconsin. And so I think that private schools are not bound by a lot of the same regulations. I think they are still just as accountable. I mean, again, all the schools in the voucher program have to do gap audits for every penny of every dime spent for every child every year. But nonetheless, there are still a lot of other requirements that public schools have to go to that they themselves, this isn't me talking, talk to anybody involved in public schools, that they will tell you spend an awful lot of time with adults filling out paperwork that isn't increasing education. Private schools are not under the same regulatory burden that a lot of the public schools are. And so innovation is easier to come by in private schools. And it's not to say it doesn't happen in public schools. It certainly does. But there are just more hurdles to innovation, which is why I think Betsy DeVos is going to be so critical for advancing the cause of innovation inside across all sectors. Because if you take down some of those regulatory burdens, you will allow those innovators inside all of the public schools in Wisconsin the ability to try new things and spread their wings. And I think that over time will dramatically change the landscape across all of education in Wisconsin.
And what kind of paperwork are you talking about, Jim?
Well, you've got name your federal program. I mean, anything that goes into administering federal funds comes with strings. So anytime you're going to accept federal funds for anything inside education, you have a multitude of reports that you have to fill out regardless of what you're doing. Now, you could be talking title funding, IDEA, you name it, and there are all sorts of different parameters that have to be followed by the public schools. It is not to say that those federal programs themselves or the money that they're spending, certainly students with special needs and all these other things can have some very positive impact. But there's also a multitude of ways to administer those programs. And the way the federal government does it is set up by bureaucrats in Washington, and it has nothing to do with efficiency. It has nothing to do with delivering the services in a very efficient manner. It has to do with regulating education in a very bureaucratic manner. So if you're turning a lot of those programs into block grants down to the states and delivering the funds down there and letting the states developing or changing their own programs so that just the mere administration of the programs is reduced, then you're taking away adult hours from filling out paperwork, and you can turn those adult hours into help educate kids.
Let's welcome phone calls. We're talking about the appointment, and it has been a controversial appointment. Those in public education are concerned about President-elect Donald Trump's choice for Education Secretary Betsy DeVos and her ties to voucher schools and charter schools and lack of experience with public schools. We are speaking this hour with Jim Bender, who is president of School Choice Wisconsin, a strong advocate for voucher schools for reform to education. And he's explaining what that is and why he is delighted with the choice. We'll hear from somebody who's opposed a little bit later. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We start with Tony in Milwaukee, Jim. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a couple concerns. The gentleman talks about, you know, we can't use 1 year of metrics, but he's using 1 year metrics. He's using a lot of political talking points without any proof. Voucher schools, the private ones, have gone under in the city of Milwaukee. Because of no accountability, because the person who decided to put the voucher school together hustled all the money from the parents. Voucher schools and private schools get to pick and choose the children they get. Public schools don't get to pick and choose. It's like an ice cream factory. If they get bad cream, they can send it back. But with schools, you get all the students, even the bad ones, and social economical problems play into that. That's why the police are called more often to public schools, because they don't get to choose their students. They have to take them all.
Jim.
Typical talking points. Every time I call into a show, these are the two things that are said constantly. So by law, every school in the voucher program accepts their students on a random lottery. They can't pick and choose. In fact, by law, the only students, the only districts that can choose schools are public schools. If you want to get into Reagan High School, if you want to get into a select high school in MPS, you have to pass a test to prove your proficiency to get into that school. Private schools can't do that. That doesn't happen. Have there been schools that have closed in the voucher program? Yes, there have, for different reasons. Sometimes it's for the marketplace. When parents don't want to attend the school anymore, and there's a rapid decline in enrollment, yes, sometimes schools close. Oftentimes, because of the accountability, in fact, there were two schools closed earlier this year in the voucher program because they didn't fulfill the financial requirements of the program, and they were removed from the program. They were two low-performing schools. So there were two low-performing schools closed in the voucher program. There were zero low-performing schools closed at MPS. In fact, over the last 30 years, there haven't been any closures of schools because of low performance in MPS. And yes, there have been low-performing charter schools that were closed in Michigan. There were low-performing schools that closed in Milwaukee. And that's a good thing. We don't want to continually fund failure. If a school isn't operating correctly, they're out of the program. That's the way it should work. Unfortunately, in public schools, you can have a school with literally 0% proficiency in reading year after year after year after year, and that school stays open. And that's unfortunate because there aren't reforms, there aren't innovations turning those schools around because the status quo just seems to be too acceptable at times. So, yeah, that's a marketplace at work, which is why you're seeing the overall enrollment of the voucher program increase over time, even as the low-performing schools are removed from the program, and you're seeing test scores rise over time. You're seeing results rise over time because enrollment is increasing at the high-performing schools and decreasing at the low-performing schools.
Thanks, Tony, for your call. Judith in Wausau, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a little confused here because your guest, Mr. Bender, seems to be speaking as though all parents have the time and the background, the experience, and shall we say, the discrimination to make judgments about various schools. Further, he seems to be speaking as though the vast majority of parents are heavily involved in their children's academic careers. My parents never had anything to do with my homework, I'll put it that way. And my father left school at 15 as he grew up in the Depression to help support his family. The economy is not, as we know, in the best of shape, and many people are working several jobs at a time. I do not think that the average person has time to really investigate and make decisions like this. I would also point out that every time the idea of privatization comes up, we are asking the consumer of the privatized goods or services to invest an extraordinary amount of time to gain the knowledge to make judgments about it. One of the big problems with 401ks, since most people know next to nothing about investments or mutual funds. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Judith. Thanks for the call.
This is another common argument that we hear. Parents aren't capable of making good decisions. Therefore, we should leave it up to other people. Well, I just don't view the world that way. There is no perfect system because everything involves humans, and we are imperfect to the core. But nonetheless, parents, by and large, overall, will make better choices for their children than a zip code or a bureaucrat will. I don't think we need to cede that off. I hear this often that, I do believe moving forward, because now all publicly funded students are in the student information system and every school is generating a report card, while still imperfect, gives a little bit broader view of what's going on in the school. I do believe parents should have easy access to all sorts of information that they can do it. Will there be parents that are not involved in their kids' education? That's true, but that's true whether that student resides in a public school, a charter school, or a school in the voucher program. That impact would be the same over those times. I still think overall you've got to have, by and large, parents making these decisions. And I correlate this back to healthcare because a lot of healthcare in this country is publicly funded. But we don't set up when you enter into Obamacare or you're on Medicaid, while there may be some variety of plans you can choose from, for the most part, you get to, in your region, you can choose different hospitals. You can choose different doctors. If you're not happy with a doctor, you can go to a different doctor. I mean, those are all parts of the system. But in education, not only for most people, especially if you don't have any income or much income, you don't get to choose your school. You don't get to choose your teacher. You don't get to choose any of those things. You are locked in by your zip code to a place. And if the alternative you know, is on occasion there's a parent that isn't engaged as they should be versus parents that are trapped without any options, I'm still going to choose parents having the ability to make the best decision for their children.
One more question to you, and this will come up during our next half-hour conversation. And that's from, we'll be speaking with the Vice President of Education Policy at the Center for American Progress. Their report says that Betsy DeVos's track record in Michigan, let me read you what they say, her efforts focused mostly in her home state of Michigan, her education efforts. They say 80% of state charter schools are run by for-profit entities with little transparency, and they are concerned about how those schools spend public money. They say that Detroit has been particularly hard hit, with many of these schools having mold, mildew, and freezing classrooms, leading to a revolt among teachers and parents earlier this year. What do you say to that?
I say that, again, those are political arguments. If those people were really concerned about the financial state of education in Michigan, when you look at the debilitating legacy cost that unions of the past promised workers of the future that they couldn't pay for, look at Milwaukee alone. You've got more than $1 billion in legacy costs moving forward. The charter and private school voucher programs are certainly more pay-as-you-go. There are not legacy costs affiliated with these schools. We are not putting taxpayers of the future in any sort of danger or precarious situation that many of the large urban public school districts are. There's not a future obligation to taxpayers from these entities. Again, it's a political argument. It's meant to try to diminish education reform as if the public education establishment is some sort of Norman Rockwell painting that's pure and free of any sort of motivation with regards to profit or revenue or anything else. It's a silly argument. Again, it doesn't advance and it doesn't keep the focus where it needs to be. The focus needs to be on the outcome of children and how well they're being educated. Most people that are opposed to education reform will bring up arguments that have nothing to do with that. They want to talk about anything except the outcomes of children, or they want to make excuses for why children aren't learning. I think we need to throw away the excuses, throw away the political arguments, and focus on systems that are helping parents finding great solutions for their own kids. I believe Betsy DeVos is a great pick because she's not going to get sidetracked with all of these other arguments and all of these other kind of shiny objects that are meant to distract the actual conversation, which is let's empower teachers, let's empower local districts to be innovative and come up with solutions and get the bureaucratic nightmare that is Washington, D.C. and the federal government off their backs.
Jim, thanks very much. Jim Bender, our first guest. He is president of School Choice Wisconsin. This is the Ideas Network. Catherine Brown joins us now with another viewpoint, a different viewpoint on the nomination of Betsy DeVos to be Education Secretary. And Catherine is Vice President of Education Policy at the Center for American Progress. We will get to your phone calls for her momentarily. The number is 800-486-8655. Hello, Catherine. Thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I guess the first half hour from School Choice Wisconsin said that Betsy DeVos was a great pick. What do you think of the appointment, or the nomination, I should say?
I have a really different viewpoint. I think every American should be deeply concerned about the nomination of Betsy DeVos to be Secretary of Education, because what we know about her background is that she wants to destroy public schools as we know them. She's never taught at, worked at, sent her children to a public school, attended a public school herself. It's actually unclear at this point if she's even set foot in a public school. And she has argued vehemently that government funds should be used to support private and for-profit schools, despite the fact that the research shows that many do a worse job of educating students. She's an ideologically driven billionaire who wants the education secretary to be the Wild West, a free market without any accountability. This is just bad policy, bad economic policy. Just look at the banking crisis and what the lack of regulation on Wall Street has wrought. And it's also bad education policy. And in Michigan, where she's had the greatest influence, she has worked aggressively to deregulate charter schools. As you mentioned, 80% of the charter schools in Michigan are for-profits. This is a vastly higher percentage than in any other state in the country. and they are performing worse than nearly any other state in the country, and even worse than traditional public schools in Michigan. So I'm really concerned.
Mm-hmm. Our guest the first half hour said, and he was, everybody quotes different statistics with all of this, and I don't know where you go to find exactly what's true. He talked about ACT scores being much higher with charter schools, voucher schools in the state of Wisconsin, standardized test scores, recent ones showing that the charter and voucher schools are doing better than public schools. Where do people go for statistics on all of this? Who's doing better academically?
Well, I think if you want to look at the, for example, the Center for Research on Educational Outcomes at Stanford just came out with Michigan's rankings compared with other states and the time in which Betsy DeVos had the greatest influence. What we've seen, for example, is in fourth grade reading and math and eighth grade reading and math, the state has gone from 28th in 2003 to 41st in 2015. It's been a very consistent decline. So on the NAEP scores, again, which are the, and I totally agree with you, there are lots of different sources. Mm-hmm. I hear that point. But on the NAEP scores, which is widely viewed as the nation's report card, it's a rigorous assessment that compares states across the country, what we see is Michigan doing a lot worse than other states, and the charter sector in particular.
Do you think, every time we talk about this issue, there are people, and we'll maybe have somebody call in this hour, who will say that they're worried that there will be a complete privatization of schools. We're heading toward an era of no public schools. Do you foresee that as a possibility?
Well, I think it's a fair thing to worry about. It's something that I'm worried about. I think it's something that we should all worry about because that's what Betsy DeVos stands for, and that's what President-elect Trump said he wanted to do during the campaign. He said he wanted to basically divert $20 billion in federal education funding to private school vouchers. And, you know, I think that the hopeful part of it, which is somewhat ironic from Trump's perspective, is that it actually, vouchers just don't work as a public policy in vast swaths of the country. If you live in a rural area or even a suburban area, there simply aren't enough schools for vouchers to work. Most parents don't want to drive for an hour to take their kids to a different school. So I think, you know, in those places, it's going to be hard to operationalize. But if he gets his way, I think you would see a massive movement away from investing in our public schools to investing in private and for-profit schools.
Mm-hmm. And what about regulations? Do you think that most schools have an excessive amount of paperwork they have to do, be it dealing with school lunches, federal program, or special needs students?
Well, I'm glad you brought this up because I think regulation is actually one of the key points that we need to be questioning Betsy DeVos about, because one of the things she's been incredibly strong about, she actually spent $1.5 million of her own money to try to kill a bill in the state legislature in Michigan with having any accountability for charter schools. So she's not just for, you know, reducing paperwork, which, you know, we can have a conversation about whether that's a good idea or not. I'm sure there are some efficiencies to be gained. But she's for no accountability whatsoever, no oversight, no transparency about how funding is spent, really no systems to know how schools are doing and to make sure they're serving all kids. And even abiding by federal law, you know, there's federal laws that say you have to serve kids with disabilities. You have to give some protections to kids who don't speak English. And she has worked very aggressively to create no accountability whatsoever, no regulation, no oversight. And I think it's deeply troubling.
Let's go to some response. We've had a lot from listeners. Richard sends this message on Facebook. Adjusted for inflation, U.S. education spending per student has increased by about 50% in the past 20 years, while outcomes by any measure have declined. The underlying erosion in core values at the root of this problem can be reversed by any institution, whether public or private. Betsy DeVos gets this and will push for education policy, which reinforces good parenting rather than pumping more money into programs which, although well-intentioned, fail to compensate for bad parenting?
Well, you know, I think choice can be an important part of the system, and I am 100% for, and we should all believe that parents should have information and be able to make informed choices and be involved in their kids' education. I think that makes a lot of sense. Where the argument falls off the rails is when you have no information. So when there is no, for example, a school report card that even gives you some basic information about how each school is doing, it's extremely difficult to make an informed decision about where to send your kids. And as to the first point, you know, we actually have the highest graduation rates in our country. We're on track for 80% of kids to be graduating from high school, prepared to go to college or career by 2020. That's really extraordinary. We've also seen achievement gaps narrowing because students of color and disadvantaged students who have traditionally been left out of our public schools are actually doing better on our national measures. So we certainly have work to do. That I completely concede. Lots of problems with our public schools, but they are on the right track, and I'm pretty worried that Betsy DeVos and the Trump administration will derail all of the work that's been done over the last two decades.
Let's go to Mary in Oshkosh. Hello, Mary.
Hi. I have quite a few problems with this. First off, the gentleman who said that unions are a problem, my aunt worked for the public school system for 35 years. She never made enough money that she could live by herself on, and that was what unions were made for. That, you know, that really irritated me. There are a few different problems with taking the money, taking federal funds for private charter schools. One, the federal government funds should not be going to religious institutions. They should just not. That's just not right. Two, what about when kids can't get into a charter school? If the public schools are closed, where are they going to go? Three, my kids were raised in rural areas, and they got on the bus at 6:30 in the morning every day to get to school because I had to go to work. There are no charter choices. If all the public school funds are sent to charter schools and my kids don't have access to one, that's not right. If my taxes are going to these charter schools and my kids don't have access, I just have a really serious problem with that. And the last point I'd like to make is that even now with the state apportioning different funds, my kids didn't have history books or chemistry books for their classes. They already did that. That's not going to help. Wisconsin is not a good measure for this because Scott Walker is a terrible governor for the schools. He has destroyed the school system. All right, I'm going to stop talking.
All right, Mary.
And let somebody answer.
All right, thanks. Catherine, your answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the caller made some excellent points. We have enshrined in our Constitution a separation between church and state. Vouchers with divert public money to parochial schools. That's happening in Wisconsin. And I think one interesting thing to note in Wisconsin is a huge percentage of the students who are getting vouchers were already attending the private schools. So they're basically buying out people who had another way to go to those schools using public dollars. Unions, I think it's important to remember that unions represent teachers. And what do we know about teachers? We totally devalue the teaching profession in this country. Teachers actually earn only 60% of college-educated professionals. I think we should be investing much more to support our teachers. We're asking more of them, and we haven't really changed the way we train them or support them, so this is a huge problem. And I think the caller makes a good point about charters, too. In a choice-based system, you have to ensure that every student actually has access to a good school, and it's not as though there are, you know, thousands of seats in high-performing schools that are sitting empty just waiting for students with vouchers to go into them. Even in densely populated areas, those schools tend to have long waiting lists. If they're charters or private schools, they tend to have, you know, way more applicants than they can possibly accommodate. So it is a bit of a false choice, and you certainly need to have a high-quality option that every student has the right to go to.
Can you please spend just a few moments talking about what's happened to Detroit schools, Catherine?
Well, I mean, Detroit is a complicated story, but the bottom line is that the schools are among the lowest performing in the entire country. The system has a lot of charters. Again, most of them are for-profit, vastly more for-profit schools than in other states in the country. And you have horrible conditions in terms of the physical facilities. There are rodents in many of these schools. They don't have walls or toilet paper. I mean, just the base. These are not schools that you or I would send our kids to in a million years. And when it comes to student outcomes, they are abject failures. I don't remember the exact number, but it's less than 100 kids are actually advanced in Detroit, kids of color. I think it's even in the single digits. So if this is the model for what we're going to bring to the rest of the country, we should all be very wary.
And who's running the schools?
Who's running the schools now? I mean, they were under the an emergency manager for a long time, and that was actually a policy that Betsy DeVos personally worked very hard to make sure happened. That person, I believe, has been turned over, but I don't know exactly who's running them right now.
Let's go to Peter in Baraboo. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Thank you so much again for taking the call. I am a school board member here in Baraboo, and I'd like to make two comments. One, I agree with everything that your current guest has shared in terms of the research and the statistics. We see that clearly documented in the performance of our young people here in Baraboo and in the state in general. One of the things to recognize is that the state legislature has changed the game plan, if you will, of standardized testing almost every year. So it is very difficult to get a benchmark. However, in Baraboo, we have our own internal testing that looks at the development of our students from grade to grade to grade, so that we can document their improvement as young people over the course of their educational experience. We need to rethink education. That is absolutely essential. Your former guest made some excellent points. I want to make just one clarification. As a school board member and as an educator, I am very much in favor of charter schools as long as they are under the public domain. I'm 67 years old. I have a master's in teaching. I've been deeply involved in the educational issues. In my day, we had schools that focused on areas of interest that young people expressed. And the curriculum could be taught the standard, most fundamental, basic curriculums in English, in math, in science could be taught, whether that student was in a school that focused on the arts or focused on vocational issues or focused on science or focused on agriculture. The issue that I would agree with your former guest, is that we need to take a lead from where the interests of the students lie. And in that instance, any curriculum can be taught. I used to say you can teach a skateboarder physics if they want to know why they can't do that triple flip. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Peter.
You so much for all the work you do and for communicating to our citizens how important it is to be engaged in what is happening in our state and our nation in terms of education and in terms of all of the human components that make us supposedly a great nation. Thank you for the work you do.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. Hear ye, let's be engaged. We are. Catherine, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think innovation absolutely has to be a critical part of how we're improving our schools. And like the caller, I think charters, in the context of a system where there's some accountability and transparency, where you're not letting low-performing charter schools open additional campuses. This, by the way, is something that Betsy DeVos advocated for. There was a bill that said if you're consistently low performing, if your students are never achieving, if they're never achieving at grade level, you shouldn't be allowed to grow. And she said, no, we're going to let parents vote with their feet. They're going to decide. Of course, they don't have information about how well the students are doing, so it's very difficult for them to vote with their feet. So again, innovation, yes, but in the context of some transparency, oversight to make sure that we're not, you know, experimenting on the backs of kids. And unfortunately, it tends to be poor kids who are the ones who are the subject of these experiments because the parents with more resources are more vigilant or they have more time to be more vigilant about the kind of education their kids are receiving.
And let's go to Gail, who has a comment about transparency, I believe. Gail in Fish Creek. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have had this conversation with quite a few people that have been watching the whole school system. They've had kids in school. And the one thing I recall is that early on in the debates between George W. Bush and Al Gore, George Bush said that he didn't want to go down in history as being the president who governed law. He wanted to leave that to the states. He wanted to go down in history as being the president that governed economics. And I see 16 years later who we have as president-elect, who he is bringing in as all of his cabinet members, and what is happening with the educational system falls into line with that. Watching how colleges are starting to build new dormitories, and it's all investor-backed, and they're all privatized, and that's where they're leading, and they're going into public schools and changing that while crippling their education. Because back in the 80s, when Richard Feynman and a group of physicists, and you know, he was a quantum physicist, a great mind, had said to start to tell children, teach them basic physics before they teach them anything else, and they will be open to learning, and the kids will naturally do better, and that never happened. So I believe that since the 80s, they've been slowly, slowly taking down the public education system, and slowly, slowly now, in the last 15 years, pushing for privatizing. And the kids are in the middle, and it's really sad.
Catherine.
Yeah, unfortunately, I agree. I mean, what we know about Betsy DeVos is she's a billionaire. She runs a private investment company with her husband. You know, her husband inherited his wealth from Amway, which has paid enormous fines for making a profit basically off people who don't have a lot of money. And I think this is her ideological disposition, that we need free markets, free. I'm not just talking about free markets, but like the wild, wild west of free markets, no accountability and no regulation and no oversight. And the idea that, and as we've seen, for-profit companies benefit in her worldview, because that's been really the focus in Michigan. And so I think it's deeply problematic that we would have a lot of for-profit companies making money off of our K-12 system and our students.
We're talking this hour about the nomination of Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education. And as you can tell, it is controversial as the controversy continues about which way forward for schools in this country. Do we need to spend more money, more resources on private schools, voucher schools? Should there be for-profit companies running schools? What about public schools? Have we lost the focus on how best to educate a child? This controversy has been raging for quite some time. It will only continue with the nomination of DeVos. Our guest this half hour of the program, we had somebody who was very enthusiastic about her appointment the first half hour of the show, Catherine Brown, not very delighted, Vice President of Education Policy at American Progress, is with us now. And this is the Ideas Network. Joan in Eau Claire is next. Hi, Joan.
Good afternoon. Public schools are many, many citizens' only prayer for a middle-class lifestyle. Let's say, for instance, that all public schools are replaced by private schools, and that would mean that the state funds would then go to the private schools. What would happen should the tuition of those private schools go through the roof? Who would be able to then afford that? What would happen when private schools close? This would leave most citizens with no options for an education, and public schools completely unfunded. And thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Jean, for speaking. Catherine.
I think this is an excellent point. The proposal that Trump put on the table during the campaign said that he would provide $1,200 for students to attend private schools. The average private school tuition is around $12,000. There's a huge gap between what he would provide and what would actually make it affordable for parents. So that alone, his program relies on states investing $100 billion of taxpayer dollars in private schools. It's not really a viable solution. And I'm trying to remember what the second half of her question was.
Oh, that's okay. We have other things to move in on. Thank you, though, very much, Joan, for your call and making good points. What about this idea our first guest talked about, giving a block grant to a state to deal with education, that there's entirely too much regulatory stuff going on at the federal level? They're too involved in what's going or should be going on a local level in this state. Would it make more sense to turn money over to the states and get the federal government as much as possible out of public education?
Well, what you see when you block grant funding of all types, so not just education, but you know, federal social services is the money. It's really a Republican-driven strategy to reduce the amount that gets invested in those services. So they say we're going to get this much amount, and then it's not tied to inflation. There's no way to ensure that that increase happens. Now, to the point of is there too much regulation, you know, the main job of the federal government when it comes to education is ensuring civil rights protections. We have a lot of regulation or a fair amount of regulation, or particularly around students with special needs.
Mm-hmm.
There's a federal law that says they have a right, they have an absolute right to a free, appropriate public education. And this was put in place. I think it's always important to remember the history, because prior to that bill getting enacted, schools just didn't serve kids with special needs. They would say, oh, that kid's in a wheelchair.
Right.
Sorry, we don't have a ramp. Not going to be able to help that child, or that child's deaf. Too bad. And, you know, a lot of advocacy went into to fixing that situation. So it's not regulation for regulation's sake. And, again, I'm sure there are opportunities to streamline, but we do need to make sure the most vulnerable children get educated. Mm.
Catherine, thank you so much for being with us. Catherine Brown, Vice President of Education Policy at American Progress, and we thank Jim Bender, President, School Choice of Wisconsin. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this program, and to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Thanks for your calls. We will continue doing topics concerning education in the days ahead.